Hello and welcome to Nikon Report, your weekly roundup of all the latest Nikon news and all other photographic announcements that we found interesting. This constant here on the right-hand side and on the left-hand side is...
Becky.
This side, yes. Okay, so how are you? How are you feeling?
I'm great. Yes. Absolutely, yes.
Getting there.
Hoping to be let out of my prison soon.
Yeah, freedom soon. That's good. But I'm sure you had lots of time to read about Z30 announcements and Z400mm announcement.
I did nothing else while convalescing.
Well, sounds fantastic. So let's talk about Z400mm first, since that was the most exciting announcement for people who watch us. So Nikon Rumors published several comparisons with the other Nikon lenses. So first one up, we had 500 PF lens. And obviously, if we disregard the size and the weight, which were they're quite similar, but 500, of course, is bigger. What's most interesting thing to me is actually MTF chart that they published. According to that, actually 500 looks better while priced around the same time. What do you think, Bex? Do you normally trust MTF charts as a kind of your main thing when you're choosing the lens?
Actually, not at all. Maybe that's ignorant of me, but I don't usually look at the MTF chart to decide whether or not I want a lens. For me, it's more about, will it do what I need it to do? Is it convenient? Is it the right price point, etc.? So the MTF chart is very much a secondary thing, if not a tertiary or beyond thing for me. What I do find interesting is that it's been compared against the 500PF over, say, the 300PF. Obviously, it sits between the two, and I wonder why that is.
Well, I wonder if people disregard it because it's 300mm, so it's like, you know, it's shorter. Normally, when people go for wildlife and sports, they want to get the longest focal distance possible. But also, it could be a price as well, because in UK, it's normally priced just under £2,000, and I think it's on offer at the moment about 18. I'm sure in the US, it's about the same price-wise. But I think a lot of people disregard it just based on price as well. In my opinion, 300mm lens is very underrated lens. It's one of those new generation lenses that were designed on the computer, and they were simulated, the performance of the lens was simulated on the computer itself, and that would help them to A, make the lens a lot better optically, B, to cut the cost on the development and the production, because you need to have less physical samples, but also, yeah, overall performance of the lens has improved as well. So in my opinion, people should compare it, but I think the focal distance really makes more logical sense for a lot of people to compare it with a longer lens than a shorter one.
Yes.
So Bex, when we're looking at 400mm release, and obviously 500PF is priced very similar at the moment, and it is in stock, if you would be purchasing now and you're a wildlife photographer, what would be your first choice? Would you go for 500PF over 400, or would you go with a native Z400mm over 500PF? Price is basically the same.
Yeah, that is an interesting question. I think I'm slightly biased because I've got the 500PF and I've used it over the last few years quite a lot. And I have a lot of love for that lens. The Z1 is obviously a few hundred grams lighter. It's about 300 grams lighter. So that's always a benefit. And if I was buying now, I'd lean towards a native Z lens. But I personally have multiple cameras. Sometimes people have DSLRs and Zs at the same time. And I think the 500PF, you can't go wrong with it. You can use teleconverters. It performs beautifully. The focusing is nice and fast. I have no complaints about that one particularly. So I'm still a big fan. I'm yet to see the 400 f4.5. I'm sure it's absolutely amazing. So I may be eating my words in a few weeks' time.
Okay, so as a 500 owner and user, you would say you're not convinced as of yet, but you're looking forward to trying it out.
Exactly. Now, Nikon Rumors also did a comparison between the 400 4.5 and the 100 400. And funnily enough, Rishi, our very own, did a review of a comparison between the 400 4.5, the 100 400, and the 500PF himself, which obviously he's had cooking for a little while longer. So it's interesting that those are the lenses that it gets compared with. But do go and check out Rishi's video if you haven't done so already. He is definitely the one who's in the know about the main differences and pros and cons of each one.
That's true. He doesn't publish videos very often, but when he does, he goes through the lenses very thoroughly. So now we also have Morten Himmler, who is very well-known wildlife photographer and works with Nikon. So he published his review of the lens with testing it with the 1.4 teleconverter, taking photographs of birds in flight. And we also have DP Review expanded version of their first video on 400mm, where they can talk about more now about the lens than before it was announced. So have a look at those. In my opinion, I think me and you should do the comparison with 100, 200 and 500 PF lenses when we get the 400 mil in for our testing. So I think it's worth doing the comparison, very similar to the comparisons we did very recently with 100, 400 lens and 70, 100, 2.8 with a 2x silicon converter attached.
I completely agree. Let's see how quickly we can get our hands on one.
Let's move on to Z30 now. Now, this particular announcement was a little bit of controversial or polarizing, I would say, for a lot of our users. And the reason for that being is it's not the camera they were hoping for. I mean, we all thought it would be something like an entry-level Z30 camera. And all we got is actually a camera that is in very different positioning from Nikon. It's a vlogger's camera, and that's something that Nikon didn't have before.
That's right. Now, we did actually do a live stream on Friday, a group therapy session, as it were, on the Z30, just inviting you all to come and bring your woes to the door. It's a safe space for everyone to air their grievances. But to be honest, a lot of the comments were quite positive, particularly from the likes of people who'd actually already gotten their hands on one, like Seth from Adorama, who said that he's got one, he's used it, along with the 400 4.5, and the Z30 actually ticked a lot of the boxes that he'd been asking for in a smaller, lighter, sort of entry-level DX body. So that's quite interesting.
That's true. I hope you're healed after watching our live stream together. So now Nikon, in the meantime, announced a Z30 accessory kit in the United States. It's something that we don't have in the UK here. But what it does have is includes the ML-L7 Bluetooth remote control that helps you to start and stop recording and access certain menus. They also include the dual-purpose small rig tripod grip to capture the content anywhere. And then also it includes a Rode mic, which goes on the hot shoe of the camera.
Yes, now we did actually ask if this was going to be a kit that would be available in the UK, because it was in all of the pictures of the marketing material for the Z30. At the moment, it sounds like the UK aren't going to get these kits, but currently it's priced in the US at $149, and it's quite possible that depending on the popularity of it over there, we may get it over here in the UK and in Europe as well. That's usually how these things go.
Well, fingers crossed. And another sign of things to come, Nikon also had a vlogger kit for Z50, but also had a movie kit for Z6 and Z6II cameras. So I think that's something that we will see in the future.
Great. Now, Small Rig have also announced a whole array of accessories, a whole accessory ecosystem for the Z30, which consists of a Small Rig wind buster with shoe mount, a cage, a base plate, and an L bracket. So they've obviously been working on this. These things don't create themselves overnight, so they've been working on this for a little bit of time. And based on the fact that Nikon USA already have an accessory kit with a Small Rig tripod in it, makes me think that maybe they've been doing some collaboration work for a little longer than we perhaps previously realized.
That's true. They're definitely working together. It's interesting to me to see Small Rig getting bigger and bigger every year, because obviously we talked about Small Rig maybe 3 years ago, and this whole perception of Chinese no-name makes that are not good quality, they don't fit very well, etc., etc. So now Small Rig is actually becoming, wouldn't say it's a household name, but if you are a photographer on a budget, you can purchase things like L plates and some video accessories for your camera reasonably inexpensively, because before that we had Readerite, Staff, Kirk, and for something like an L plate, you'd have to pay like around $200 just to get something like this. So to get those things on the budget that you don't really feel the cost, it's very, very nice to have. So I personally very happy that Small Rig exists, that we now getting a lot of those accessories for our expensive cameras that are well made and also reasonably inexpensive.
Perfect. I agree. I think it's good to have affordable photographic accessories. Next up, Nikon Tech Support have actually published a Z30 supported memory cards list. So if you are interested in getting a hold of a Z30, or you've already got one on pre-order, do check that out to make sure that your memory cards are compatible. And already, Asobinet have published a comparison of the Z30 versus the ZFC.
Okay, so basically, if you're looking for smaller and lighter camera, then Z30 where it's at, but the difference is very, very small. So I would personally choose the camera based on your budget, but also the looks, because obviously ZFC is a retro vintage looking camera, and Z30 is a more modern one, so the choice is yours. Now, we also have lots of videos came out on Z30, the first one up from Kai himself. So Kai is very well known YouTuber. He published his own video on that, so have a look at that and his thoughts on the camera. We also had Matt Irvin, who talks about Z30 as well as 400mm lens. We also have a YouTuber, Jevin Dowie, publishing a review on the camera. Now, Jevin Dowie specializes in the video side of things, microphones and all sorts of things, so it's interesting to hear from people who shoot video and who are content creators about the camera that was designed for content creators. So have a look at that as well.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed on Nikon Europe's Instagram page that they've been promoting using influencers, food vloggers, and people who you'd normally see on Instagram probably shooting with a smartphone, and they put them into their marketing campaign. I think it's a very, very smart move on their part, because the major platforms where you're going to see this camera being used are places like, aside from YouTube, are going to be places like Instagram. So I expect we'll see more and more videographers getting their hands on this little camera pretty soon.
That's true.
All right. Now, a little bit more Z30 news before we move on. Nikon NX Studio, NX Tether, Picture Control, and wireless transmitter utilities have been updated with added support for the Z30 camera. So if you need the links, we've included them in the description box and podcast notes for you, but they're also available on your local Nikon website.
That's true. And they also did some small bug fixes as well. So I would recommend to update for everyone who uses this type of software. Now, let's move on to other Nikon news. They're not exactly related to Nikon cameras, but a couple of news on Nikon sport optics, which normally includes field scopes and binoculars. The first one up that we have is that Nikon will increase their prices on their sports optics in September.
There was a letter sent to retailers from Nikon headquarters, just basically explaining the reason why they're doing a price increase. It has a lot to do with the disruption of global supply chains, which is a term that gets used frequently and often these days all over the world, so not a huge surprise there. The prices will essentially go up on everything that is shipped after the 1st of September, so if you are looking for sport optics, then it would be a good idea to get in your order nice and early.
Buy now. Now, another non-flattering news for Nikon sport optics is, if you already bought a binocular or a field scope, then it may have come with a strap. Now, some of those straps, according to Nikon, they found they are not compliant with certain regulations. So if you got one of those straps, you can exchange it free of charge with Nikon. The instructions are in the links under the comments below. And there are some images there that shows you how to identify that strap and then send it to Nikon. So have a look at that as well.
Perfect. Now, our last bit of Nikon news is Nikon publishing an article which they've entitled Communicating the Value of Our Next Generation Technologies. Nikon talks about the future technologies that will help humanity.
Yeah, so not much about the actually optics or photography itself, but obviously Nikon does healthcare and a lot of, you know, semiconductor productions, etc., etc. So they talk a lot about this article, about those technologies, including robots.
And shark skin.
Obviously, when you say robots, you also say shark skin, you know.
The two are synonymous.
Exactly, like Sharknado.
Okay, now for third-party news for you. So Mica introduced a new 50mm f0.9 manual focus APS-C lens for the Nikon Z mount. This lens is constructed of five groups of seven elements. It's got an aperture range of 0.95 up to f16, a minimum focusing distance of 45 centimeters. It weighs only 420 grams and is priced at a mere $249.
Yeah, so first when I heard 50 0.95, I thought it was a full frame lens, but then I heard the price of 249, then it's been a DX lens. It's not a big deal because its price is such. So if you are a ZFC user or Z50 user or perhaps Z30, then you can consider this lens. Now, we also have a rumor of upcoming Venus Optical over 12-24 5.6 lens. Now, this one is full frame for Nikon Z mount, ultra wide, 5.6, the range that goes up to f22. It's got 15 elements and 11 groups. It's only got 5 aperture blades. So bokeh is not going to be as battery smooth, but you probably won't get bokeh on a wide-angle lens.
A wide-angle
anyway.
Lens, I think that's a bit irrelevant. So
exactly,
I think they'll
but
be okay.
Normally, I would wait like 7 blades or something like this.
Yeah, fair enough. It does have a close focusing distance of 15 centimeters, which is fair enough for a landscape lens. The Nikon wide-angle lenses tend to be closer these days, but it's 497 grams.
It's not bad.
I'm actually quite excited that we're finally seeing like something that is as wide as a 12 to 24.
Because they can be used on DX cameras, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, because we're missing that on DX cameras. And I would assume, or hope at least, that it's going to be fairly affordable considering it's a third-party lens. We don't have a price on this one yet, though.
Yeah, as soon as it comes out, I'm sure we'll have more details on that. And now let's talk about lighting. There were a couple of studio and location lighting announcements. The first one comes from Profoto. They announced an A2 studio lighting. Now, this studio lighting is basically the size of a Coca-Cola can. So very small and light, portable, comes with its own battery, so can be used on location. It comes with a lighting stand adapter, which can be removed to save light, but you can obviously attach accessories like umbrellas, etc., etc. Now, it's only weighs 773 grams. Output is 100 watts, which is small, but at the same time, you can put this light like inside the tight places like cars or somewhere, let's say in the flat, like in some corners, etc., etc. Very useful, I would say. Yeah,
I think that that could be quite useful actually, just for a number of practical purposes. So it's exciting to see a new smaller strobe. It will sort of change people's perception of the ungainly and slightly cumbersome studio flash setup that you have to bring along when you have constant lights.
That's true. And there's everything Profoto. It's obviously not cheap because you're paying for the quality. If you want a cheaper alternative, there's AD100 Pro from Godox, which is about the same size and weight. But obviously, it's not Profoto. So, you know, build quality is not there, but they're very capable as well. So you can have a look at those as well. Okay, we also have Seth Miranda, who played with this flash as well. It's on Adorama channel. Have a look at his thoughts on this flash in his video.
Yeah, now more lighting news. Godox have announced a new R200 ring flash. The R200 is an attachment for the AD200P power device. It's a ring-shaped flash with a 200-watt strobe. It's a lighter, lower power alternative to the AR400 for anyone who had one of those. And it's quite nice to see another ring flash out there in the market. I thought the ring flashes were starting to be phased out slightly. It feels like something that we were interested in about 15 years ago, but obviously people still use them, particularly influencers.
Well, I think it was a product of its time. It's like the music videos of 90s and 2000s. They had this own look, and it's nowadays very uncomfortable to watch most of them. But what I would say, speaking of this particular flash ring, just to clarify, you can't just buy it and start using it. You have to have AD200P attachment. They have this AD200 Pro flash, which looks like a kind of rectangle brick. And it's a bit more powerful than the AD100 Pro that I mentioned before. So basically, you can remove the light bit from that flash and then attach ring flash to it. And that's how you use it. So while it's priced about $250, you will need to have a AD200 Pro, which will cost you another $250 or so. So keep that in mind before purchasing it.
Yes. Now, if any of that is confusing to you, there is a video on YouTube which might help you. It is by Godox. It's called the Godox R200 Ring Flash, One More Leap of the Most Versatile System. So if you're interested, do go check that out.
Fantastic. Okay, let's move on to review section. The first one up is our review of 100 to 400 lens versus 70-200 with teleconverter. We compare the sharpness of the lens. We tell you which lens you should consider while doing certain things. So have a look at that. It's quite an interesting experience.
Next up, Kappa published a quick review on the Takina SZX 400 f8 reflex and 2x extender kit for the Nikon Z mount. This is priced at $249. It's a long lens on a very tight budget, so that might be of interest to anyone looking for something like that.
That's true. It's a mirror lens, but that goes natively on your body. Well, it comes with the attachment that will allow you to put it on that body, but obviously gives you that length at a fraction of the cost. Obviously, you will get some perks like a donut shape, bokeh, etc., etc., but obviously it's not going to win any awards in terms of sharpness and performance, but it's cheap. And that's why you may want to consider if you're not the, let's say, frequent use of those focal distance, but you just want to have it in your bag just in case.
Yeah, if you've not got very fast moving subjects as well, because obviously reflex lenses are manual focus.
Indeed.
Now for your weekend read and watch segment, we have the Nikkor the 1001 Nights number 82. This one looked at the best-selling DX format lens released in the age of the D70S, the DXVR 18-200, which was apparently quite a groundbreaking lens at the time. So do go and have a read of that one.
I was surprised by this article because normally they publish an article, one of those 1001 Nights articles on very obscure lens, so manual focus glass. So I didn't expect to see 18 to 200 there. And obviously 18 to 200 is a consumer lens. It's been replaced now three times. We had 18 to 200 Mark II with a little switch for the zoom to eliminate the creep. And also then we had two 18 to 300 lens, which were evolution of 18 to 200. So just to see how Nikon came up to this lens and what research they did to create this lens is very, very interesting. We don't see that very often.
No, but I will say this is one of the last lenses, I believe, where Nikon used a single designer on the lens rather than a team of designers. Shortly after that, well, specifically on the VR2 version, they used a team, and that kind of changed the way that lenses were designed and made later on.
That's true. So now you don't have just one creator behind the lens, but actually a group of people working on certain projects.
That's right. Then we have 25 years of digital photography from ugly to awesome by Petapixel. This is by sports photographer Reid Hoffman, who talks about his experience of digital photography as a pro in 25 years and what it is now with the release of the Z9.
Yeah, so you go through them all from early Kodak prototypes to Nikon D1, D2s, etc., etc. Have a look at this. A very fascinating article to read. And on this note, we conclude our session for this week. Thank you very much for watching us.
Yes, thank you very much for watching and or listening. Please give us a like and a subscribe if you're on YouTube. It would massively help the channel. Give us a follow, a rating, perhaps even a review if you're listening on a podcast platform.
We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Amazon Music, and all other podcast places in high fidelity.
Excellent. And if you'd like to find us on the internet of the world, you can find me at Rebecca_Danese. You can find him at Constantine Kochkin, and you can find the shop at Nikon@Grays.
Fantastic. Thanks for watching us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.